Hi, this is Christopher Clark from GeekForce5.com, and I'm good to go here with my friend John Martin from Songs That Saved Your Life. How's it going?
Good. Listeners at home, if you know that's even what we're calling that guy. Yeah, they didn't see what just happened, which was a good few minutes of trying to figure out how to say hello on the podcast.
It's a very difficult thing to say hello.
It's going
to
be a goat with special needs this week, this month.
It very well might be.
Who knows? Hi, everybody.
Hi. So it's been a long time, and
yeah, we haven't goated since June.
Since June, Jesus, I did not realize how long it had been.
It's true. We missed all of July. Although we had a field trip, and
we did
almost all of August. So, well,
the
done.
Field trip was fun, though.
That's true. We did actually do a goat field trip, a real live field trip, as promised, to Fun Spot.
Although we weren't able to bring the goat with us,
we couldn't bring the goat.
They wouldn't let him in.
No goats. No goats allowed near the arcade games.
Yeah, he really wanted to play Joust.
Yeah, Joust rules.
Yeah.
That was awesome. Yeah. You know, I mean, obviously inspired by King of Kong.
Which I still haven't seen because I'm...
Gotta see it.
I know.
I'll hook you up when I come home because it's that good.
I've said to other people since then that I haven't seen it, and they've all given me sort of the same reaction. Like, what?
Oh, it's really great. It's fantastic. So...
How do I run a site about geekery without having seen...
Exactly. It's required viewing.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know how I haven't seen it, but I did go to the place, and we, among many other things, we bowled a lot, which was interesting.
We did go bowling. We did two kinds of bowling.
Yes.
Within two ways.
I bowl both ways, or three ways sometimes.
Sure. So we did regular, I guess, 10-pin big ball bowling, and we did candlepin bowling, which I think...
Which is for those of us who prefer smaller balls.
Yeah. Which is, you know, it's kind of fun, but it's hard. Like, I think candlepin bowling is way harder. You actually have to, like, be precise with your with your shooting.
Yeah, and of course, what I can't remember is duckpin is the only one they didn't have, and I can't remember if duckpin has the big ball or the small ball. And
I thought it was the little one.
Yeah, I think you might be right because it's got the really tiny pins. But
yeah,
they did not
have. Apparently, in this country, I'm in the UK. Sorry, listener at home. Which apparently, in this country, they call skittles.
Skittles.
Yeah, skittles.
Skittles.
Or they used to. Apparently, in most places now, they call them pins. But
right.
Skittles. I have Wikipedia'd the duck pin bowling, because, you know, why not? And there's a small kid holding a ball that looks like it's about the same size of... in fact, he's eating it.
He's eating it.
But apparently it either began in Baltimore or in our home state of Massachusetts. So
wow.
Go us.
Hooray for assholes.
It's been a Lowell institution since 1894.
Nice.
So rock on. Anyway.
Rock on. It was amazing to me that the amount of different things you could do at Fun Spot, aside from just the video games.
That place is awesome.
We did the bowling. We did the
mini
whole
golf.
Mini golf thing. We played air hockey.
Air hockey.
Which I think I won, didn't I? Or I came close.
I think I pulled it out in the end.
You're right. You did. I was going really strong early on, and
but to be fair, there were two kids on the table next to us who could not keep their puck on the table. So I think that maybe you were, you know, distracted.
Right.
Maybe so.
or maybe you were distracted.
Played a lot of skee ball, ate onion rings. I mean, it was a great day, you know.
Yeah. And played a lot of video games, which was nice.
A lot of video games. Very exciting.
Everything from really old school, like
Frogger,
Pac-Man, Donkey Kong, to... the peak of our childhood kind of games like Mortal Kombat and The Simpsons and
The Simpsons,
you know, the quarter eaters or whatever we call them. So it was a blast to play all of those old things all in one place.
Although with some differences, I mean, with our Mortal Kombat 3, I don't remember back in the day anybody pulling out any sort of gadget to look up codes on.
No, there was no iPhone back in 1990 whatever, where I could look up the fatalities. It wasn't so much, I was looking up fatalities. See, you were playing Raiden and I was playing Scorpion, at least for the most part.
I always play Raiden. And you have always played the Scorpion.
Yeah, and so I wasn't just looking up codes for Scorpion. I was looking up codes for Raiden 2, and it was mostly because I wanted to see a fatality. I wanted to see, like, the really over-the-top blood and guts. That's what I was after, and I didn't get it. So iPhone fail in that regard, but...
next time. Maybe next even time. Just a few weeks.
Maybe. And I will have to rehearse the codes.
That's right. Download MAME, get the emulator, and just practice.
Yeah. Figure out more moves than just the Scorpion Spear, which is pretty predictable. If you just sort of look down at the... if I'm standing still, the Scorpion...
Scorpion's not moving. It's up to...
Right. Or if you sort of look down out of the corner of your eye and you sort of see him going back, tap, or whatever. I think that's what it is.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, maybe I should duck, you know. on the other hand, I don't remember any of Raiden's moves.
He's got the back forward, for the flying charge.
Yeah.
And the down rolling to forward with the low punch for the lightning bolt. Down up for teleporting. This is gripping.
It's very gripping. But you know what will make it gripping? It's not gripping to us now, but to the audience member, they're like, of course it's gripping. I'm listening to the Mortal Kombat theme. A 3-year-old.
That's our first studio guest. People at home can't see that Chris's daughter Kaylee has wandered into the room. Hi, Kaylee.
You showed up, huh? So she's trying to invade the goat, and
nice. Goat rush.
That is bound to happen eventually with somebody who is genetically an attention hog, just like her father.
Now, if we're lucky and our one listener is kind-hearted, they've just gone aww.
That is probably what they've done.
It's okay, because this is just like King of Kong you'll see.
I haven't seen it.
But yeah,
it's just like King of Kong. The listener knows. The listener
right.
knows.
Right. So, anyway.
But it will be gripping. The point is that it will be gripping because somehow we'll float the theme to Mortal Kombat, the movie, in here. Somewhere.
That's right. But next time, we're doing the fun spot again. And
yes.
Perhaps next time we will actually capture some sort of, video of some kind.
Yes.
And
at least some audio. Something to share with the listener.
We will do our best. Sorry we have gone away and basically left you listeners with a, you should have been there. It was awesome story. But
you should have been there.
I mean, it's awesome. I mean, even just, everything was magical. We went to the fanciest McDonald's in the country.
We did.
It had a fireplace. It had leather-backed iron wrought chairs.
Yes. Did it have a talking moose?
It did have a talking moose. It had, like, dim lighting and... Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was, she liked it. She liked it.
I don't think she's been to that one.
But, it was pretty awesome.
Yeah, there was a talking moose. There's a talking moose at Bugaboo Creek. Which
yes.
Is,
I went at least with the inimitable Ken Mills.
Yes, I've been with Ken Mills. I've been with our
your own talking moose.
My own talking moose. it's the moose in McDonald's. Kind of strange,
but all very exciting.
Very exciting. I had a moose-sized burger there, which was way too much food, but was delicious. Death Pounder, which is just a weird name for a sandwich.
Bold choice.
Not quite as weird as the double quarter pounder with cheese, which I have always not understood why they don't just call it a half pounder.
I think it's just people don't like fractions.
Yes.
And it's like, oh wait, 1/4 + 1/4 is 2/4. Wait, divide by 2. Oh god. Yeah, people don't like that. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's just call it big sandwich of meat.
Big meat thing.
big meat thing. Big meat thing. I like that.
Well, it's like Julie and I were driving around one time, and I really can't remember where it was, but we saw a sign on a diner, and it said turkey stuffed melt. Like, that was the order of the words, and you kind of picture, like, I don't know, like a big giant, like a cyclops in the kitchen, you know, with like a rolling pin sitting on the floor. Turkey stuffed melt. You know, it's just the saddest thing that happened that day.
It's like you picture the giant from the Disney version of The Brave Little Taylor, who talks like that. He's also in The Christmas Carol as one of the ghosts. Turkey stuffed melt.
It's just sad. So, yeah, I'm not sure.
For some reason, that makes me think of live chicken kill, or what is it? Something like live chickens killed here, something to that effect, which I've seen in Boston traveling, or Cambridge, and really weirded me out. And it's this yellow sign with chicken on it, fresh chickens killed. I can't remember.
Yeah.
It would be a really good band name.
Come to think of it, actually, I'm thinking about the Bugaboo Creek, which, you know, if people aren't familiar with it, they should Google it, because it's an experience. You know, it seems that Ken took us to a lot of animal-themed restaurants, because I believe Ken also took us to the Roadkill Cafe, which was up in Seabrook or Hampton, maybe.
I think I might have missed that one.
Everything outside, again, talking animals on the walls.
Yeah.
And everything on the menu was, like, you know, squashed raccoon patty and whatnot. But I remember,
not nearly as fun or as child friendly as the Rainforest Cafe, which also has talking animals. I think they have one of those in Burlington.
They do,
Massachusetts. Yeah.
I've never been in it, but I've been past it in the mall and gone, ooh.
I went to one in Disney World back in '99 when I went on spring break, and had some fantastic breakfast there.
Wow, there's some, just a little esoteric thing about how my brain works. I can tell you that the Rainforest Cafe in Burlington opened the same week that Nirvana's In Utero came out, because my visual memory remembers going into the store to buy the new In Utero and seeing out of the corner of my eye the now open Rainforest Cafe. Anyway, that's how my brain works.
Wow. You know, stores opening in malls, interesting to me. There's an Apple store supposedly opening in the Pheasant Lane Mall, which I kind of was like, so I'm always interested in, like, what store is opening where. I don't know why. You know, right now, to get to an Apple store, I either have to go to work, which, you know, and go to Boston and go there, or I have to drive over to Salem, New Hampshire. But apparently there is an Apple store coming to Nashua in the Pheasant Lane Mall.
I suppose it's just encouraging that, you know, stores are opening these days.
Yes, it is encouraging. Not encouraging is the fact that I'll still just go there and look at stuff and never have enough money to buy anything.
Yeah, I hear that. Although, you know, these days, I'm seriously thinking about purchasing my first eye product.
Really?
My second Zoom has died for no apparently good reason. It was fully charged, fully functional. The next day, nothing. Can't do anything to fix it. Doesn't want to come back to life. And it's out of warranty. And I think, you know what? Maybe it's time to move on. But iPhones cost way too much per month.
Yes.
And so I was like, well, this iTouch thing is kind of cool. But it has that eye on it.
It does.
I don't know if I can rub that off, but...
Like, you might be able to, and then it would just say touch, or it'd say pod touch, because that's the really interesting thing. Everyone in the world calls it the iTouch, but officially...
That's what they call it on their website.
Officially, somewhere, it is the iPod touch. Mm. I'm not sure. But yeah, so if you rubbed it off, it might just say touch, which would be interesting.
Oh, I suppose. That's okay.
You know, if you're holding it... Well, you wouldn't be holding it up to your ear, because it's not a phone... But say that you were, and you know, holding up to your ear, and it says touch on the back, and then people just walk up to it, and they go, touch, touch.
Dude, stop it. Listening. Yeah. I can hear the ocean in this thing.
Those are supposedly pretty cool. I know people who have them. And with Wi-Fi so prevalent, you can do pretty much all the same things except get phone calls.
I don't know. You know, like, I've been... Well, actually, I suppose you could use Google Voice or Skype on it, and then... You could theoretically get phone calls. I don't know if you can
apparently you cannot use Google Voice because the Google Voice app has been banned, but you can use Skype.
Yeah, there's a way to make it work now.
That's true. I heard about that. They're going to put it all through the web, right?
So, yeah, very exciting. But
I have Skype on my phone, but it only works over Wi-Fi. So again, that wouldn't be an issue if you were using the iPod Touch.
I should have to investigate this further, but I don't know. I feel like a sellout. I've been mocking Apple products since the sixth grade. I mean, I'm sorry. I know.
I know
how you feel about them, but
I love Apple products, and they work the way that my brain works. There's a reason that the players that the iPod has become the sort of, there are probably many reasons the iPod has become the predominant music player. There needs to be some competition. And I think Zune can provide, you know, to keep pushing them forward, because eventually they're just going to get stagnant. I mean, not too stagnant, because I think that they do innovate pretty well, but I have hopes for the Zune. I wish that yours hadn't crapped out in you.
I don't know. I mean, Julie's had hers longer than I have, and it works fine all the time. My luck, I don't know.
Yeah. Before that, you had a Creative Zen, right?
I did.
Before the Zoom.
So yeah.
How long did that last you?
It still works, actually. It's sitting on the desk over there. Nora was using it until she got her own little baby Zoom. She has now, which is really small. It's like the size of a pack of gum.
Yeah, I've seen those.
You know, whatever. So yeah, I don't know. I just, you know, my problem, it's a design on the desktop thing, because I like my Winamp. My little tiny Winamp sits in the corner.
Right.
Playlist's very easy to manipulate. And with any open player, you can move files on and off it very easily. But, you know, with iTunes and with Zune, I have to first feed all of my files to them. And then I can only add files to my player through those programs, which means that, you know, they're just really locked down, and that annoys me. I would love to have... Plus, I don't like the iTunes interface, and don't like the Zune interface. So I wish you could have a third-party program, which, you know, would tag the file or whatever when it went on the player. But you could, you know, do more stuff with a playlist management in both iTunes and in Zune. So... That's my chief problem. But
yeah. Do you still use an older version of Winamp, or do you use one of the newer ones? Because the last time I checked that Winamp, it seemed like it was getting as bloated as... I like iTunes, and I accept that it's bloated. It does a whole bunch of things that I want it to do. Mm-hmm. But I totally see the appeal of especially the old Winamp, which kept things simple. It played music, and that was it.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot more garbage in Winamp these days, but, you know, you can customize it at install. And, I mean, it still uses way less system resources than my iTunes does. So, yeah. And that's the other thing, too, is I'm usually gaming or something, and I don't really want to give away my system resources to a music player.
That's true.
Anyway,
I'll be interested to see whether or not you make the leap there.
If I can afford it. I'm moving into an actual house.
Right.
You know, like, I'm only 30. It's you know, maybe time to not live in the graduate ghetto. So I'm actually moving into a proper house, and of course it you know, costs money, so we shall see. But you'll be the first to know, and you can mock me.
I won't mock you.
It's all right. Go right ahead. I deserve it. Hell, I even went to a Starbucks last month.
You went to a Starbucks.
I know. Twice. The last time I went to Starbucks with you, when we went to see Dogma in Red Bank, when we went to the Dogma premiere in Red Bank.
Right, right.
Yeah, that was the last time.
That's 1998 or 99, right?
It was probably on my 10th anniversary that I ended up going. I went with Nora to see Au Revoir Simone in Manchester at Night and Day, which actually was mentioned in Lost. Charlie says that, you know, his band played this place and that place, and they played Night and Day in Manchester, which is one of those places. It's a very cool bar. It's got a very small thrust stage in the corner of the room, which you can stand right up against. You can very easily interact with the people on the stage, and it was great. But a lot of up and coming bands that, you know, later go on to make a big play there. And
Drive Shaft.
Yeah, like Drive Shaft. I, you know, it was got to mingle with the gals from Arbor Simone in the crowd and chat about stuff.
That is neat.
And then, you know, they went up and played their show, and it was really cool. And then just hung out afterwards. So
that's very cool. That's the sort of thing I think. I was very disappointed to not be able to get tickets to the sort of quote-unquote final round of Nine Inch Nails shows, which are going to be at some of these smaller bars and smaller venues. But I almost see it as a blessing in disguise, because now I've seen Nin maybe 7 times or so, mm-hmm. and like, I love the band, and they always bring energy, and they always bring something new, but there are a bunch of bands in my iTunes library that I would love to see live, and, you know, some even that my wife might want to see live, and it's been ages since I took her to a concert, and I probably owe her about half dozen for the amount of Nin shows that I've gone to. You know, so a blessing in disguise that I'm not going to one of those, and every time I hear about a small, intimate gig like the one you were just talking about, I'm like, I gotta get to more of that kind of thing with the bands that I really like that I sort of have never seen.
It's you know, that's kind of what I'm more interested in these days. I mean, there are a lot of big bands touring, but it's like, you know, I'm going to see the Mountain Goats in October, and it's a similar small space, and that's fine with me, you know, like,
Mountain Goats would be awesome. Is it one guy, the main person?
Pretty much. There's John Darnielle, and he, you know, writes the music and, you know, and is generally the Mountain Goats. Right. It's kind of the joke is that, you know, he will wander out on stage and say, "Hi, I'm the Mountain Goats."
Yeah.
But he does tour with Rachel Finney, who's a bass player, although he has another bass player now, and he has a drummer. He does have some other musicians now. So there are actually plural goats. But yeah. I think this is a full band show that I'm going to see.
Cool.
Either way, hey, I don't care.
He/they seem that it would be a really fantastic show to see. Have you seen them live before?
No. So I'm pretty excited. And I mean, I don't know. The other thing I was excited about is, you know, I know that I'm sort of disillusioned with Billy Corgan these days, but I did hear the new song that he did a couple weeks ago from the new set of Pumpkins material, and you know, it was really, really nice. It was like kind of 1995 in musical spirit, but you know, a little bit more grown up, I guess, in terms of lyrical content. But either way, I was pretty excited. You know, let's see what happens. They've hired a new drummer, or he has, I guess, who is 19 years old.
Jesus.
Yeah, and apparently we'll start hearing a bunch of new material in September and October through the website. So
there is something to be said for the younger drummer. I gather that I think his name is Ilan Rubin, maybe, the guy who Trent Reznor hired for the last round of shows for Nine Inch Nails is a young guy. I want to say he even celebrated his 21st birthday while on tour with them. So nice. There seems to be this trend. And the dude flat out rocks. Just brings so much. I mean, you sort of have to figure, especially with a band like Nin and even with a band like the Pumpkins, you know, the drummer is probably coming close to breaking his arms every night. So a young guy can't hurt in that position.
I just had a flashback to the time that we tried to break a drummer in my basement. I believe that was one Mr. Hicks.
Yes, it was. That was Coconut Grove, right?
I believe so. It was the Coconut Grove Proposal Duo.
Yes. And did we... We did actually end up playing that at the final Westford Academy show. We played those back-to-back. And
we did.
Jeff the drummer did somehow make it through.
That was on our Monsters of Schlock tour.
Monsters of Schlock tour. We had a different name for that tour, I think, on the official band website. And I made a T-shirt once upon a time.
I believe it was the Out of the Basement tour.
Yes, that one I think was the Out of the Basement tour. Was like we had the basement tour, there was the Out of the Basement tour, which started at my parents' backyard. continued to the Boy Scout show at Temple Bethel and the two Westford Academy shows. And then we had the Fat Lady Singing Tour, which was when we played somebody's birthday party. I was about to say her name, but I don't know if I should do that.
I still think that was pretty unfair to Ken, but, you know, whatever.
Yes, it was pretty unfair to Ken. You know, with every one of those, you know, they can't see, you know, the listener cannot see
they can't
you.
See me with my head in my hands going, oh.
But for every one of those bad memories, there's at least one and a half good memories from each of those shows.
Yeah. Usually leaving and setting up.
Yes.
I
remember distinctly, it was probably sounded terrible. In fact, I'm sure that it sounded terrible, but there was a moment at that birthday show, the Fat Lady Singing Tour, where Andy started playing What a Good Boy. Mm. And I know that this sounded terrible, but he told me it sounded okay afterwards. Where Andy's just playing random songs at this point, we're all just sitting around, and I picked up the bongos.
Yeah.
Or the bongos, conga, whatever, the small ones. And I was just tapping on them, trying to keep some sort of rhythm, because at that point we didn't have a drummer.
Yeah. He died.
And he did. Yeah. He drowned, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Second one drowned.
The second one drowned. What happened to the first one?
No idea. I think he went into the army.
Yeah, yeah, that's probably true. Or was that TB player? He went into the army, didn't he?
I don't know.
Anyway, obscure Tom Hanks movie reference. That guy went on to be
is just not what I expected to be busted out in the middle of the podcast.
That's what my brain does is somehow we got to that thing you do, and now I've somehow gotten to something much cooler, which is that the guy who played TV player in That Thing You Do was the lead in Can't Hardly Wait.
That's true.
Was a much cooler, much more fun movie that I haven't seen in ages. That is a movie that I need to see.
I've got the DVD here, but I'm not sure I can pass it through the screen.
Pass it. Yeah. The soundtrack to that is amazing. And I remember that we used one of the songs, the Broham song, in my senior project.
Does anybody actually say that? Sorry.
Broham?
I was watching the Daily Show last night, and Jon Stewart was doing some funny voice, and he ended with Broham, and I thought, does anybody actually say that, and is it an M or an N at the end there?
I think in the band name, at least, there's an M.
Well, yeah, but
I don't know, you know.
I've never heard anybody, like, in an unironic way say, hey, Broham, you know, that, so.
Maybe we should bring it back. We should or start it. No, okay. I'm just throwing out suggestions there because, you know, we have
to. That's true. We do need a catchphrase or something. So, but that's not it. I don't think. That's
we're
not...
good to go. We're good to go, Broham.
Yeah, that's just yeah. No, I want to punch me in the neck. So yeah. Anyway. Oh.
So
yeah.
Buttons. So buttons. That's. What I say whenever I say so now.
This is the part where we strategically try to frustrate the listener so they'll go talk about stuff behind their back. But speaking of talking about, you know, things of substance, you know, you're actually getting close to finishing your book, huh?
I am. There's no mention of the word Broham in there, at least not yet, but I do still have maybe...
So much for bestseller.
Yeah, no kidding, huh? I do have maybe 30, 40 pages at the most left. So there's still room for a Broham in there.
Maybe dedicate it to Broham.
To Broham. Exactly. I took this week off from work, partly because I can't carry vacation over from 1 year to the next, and I need to use it all up before the summer's over, because once I start teaching, I don't have time between the two jobs to take any time off.
Teaching.
So, Yeah. Part of the reason I just had to take the time, because I'm not going to get to use it otherwise, but I also wanted to catch up on writing. And so I'm sitting here, and I am working on the final chapter. There's probably a brief epilogue, no more. Uh-huh. I'm thinking about the length of the Harry Potter epilogue, which is like, I don't know, 5 to 10 pages at the most. So there's probably a brief epilogue, but this is the last chapter. And, you know, the book has never really had an ending. It's been through 5 or 6 drafts and never had as strong a narrative arc as it does now. And so I'm sort of bringing everything to its conclusion.
Was it all a dream?
Go ahead.
Was it all a dream?
It was not all a dream, although I did just write a dream sequence.
Does something happen in the final chapter that resets it so that, like, all that stuff never happened and then it goes back to the beginning of the book and...
No, I'm not pulling a Abrams and Lindelof Lost on.
Fine, keep talking about whatever it is you're doing.
what I'm noticing is that I'm approaching this edit in more in the way that I imagine film editors approach what they do. I've got all the raw material for the book, and I've had it for a long time, mm-hmm. and I'm really cutting things together. In the way that a film editor would. I don't imagine that many authors approach a final draft in the way that I am. Maybe they do, but...
Well, how do you mean, like, film? I mean, do you have lots of index cards and you're reshooting parts of your book?
Yeah. I have various little bits of story, sometimes conversations that took place in one chapter that now sort of dramatically fit better somewhere else. I suppose in that way I've got even more flexibility than a filmmaker does, because I can drop those bits of conversation or those bits of description into completely different places and still make it make sense. I'm also, you know, it's not as linear a book as it used to be. It used to be point A to point B, but it's a book about nostalgia and about looking back at things. And so, yeah, so it's been a lot of fun to see what parts are going to make its way in there. There was a section I wrote yesterday, which I've had in my head for years, but never actually made it onto the page, but it finally had the right, it was finally the right moment for it. So it's been kind of a cool process. And my goal is to sort of be done by my birthday, which is the 5th of October. And then to finally be able to do National Novel Writing Month, that's my next big goal. Because every year that it's taken place, I've been working on this book.
Right.
And, you know, the one rule of National Novel Writing Month, or NaNoWriMo, is that you have
to... don't talk about
National. Yeah, don't talk about NaNoWriMo, yeah. So that's my project of the moment.
So do you already have an idea for the Writing Month?
I do. I'm trying to stay within their rules, so I haven't written anything down, but I have an idea, sort of a play on Oedipus to a certain extent, set in the modern day. And then eventually I have to write something freaking funny, man. Like, I am writing lots of dark stuff, and the novel has its funny moments.
Yeah.
For sure. But, man, I'm realizing that... The next few ideas that are in my brain to work on are all sort of dark things, and I need to do some comedy.
I'm still excited about the movie script we talked about on the way back from Fun Spot, which you know, is kind of like a grown up version of the movie we've already written with Hare Hicks. And
indeed, yeah, I dig that idea a lot. I think there's something to be done there that's not as farcical as we were sometimes in that earlier draft, but that still maintains a sense of humor at the same time that it's telling a story that we both sort of always come back to, because it's a really compelling story.
The most important thing, I think, is giving our listeners another way to mock us. And anything that gets our experience in the band on screen, I think, is a good way to do that.
Yeah, I think people need to see this story. They need to see what they've only heard about.
It's an inspiring story in much the same way that, I don't know, say Barack Obama's story is inspiring.
Okay.
As much as... I thought that that's where the soundbite would stop. In as much as it involves a small, half-black, half-white drum kit that... Oh, dear. Well, we'll tweak that before we put it on the back of the film.
You know? Yeah. But I think you're getting somewhere. I think the half-black, half-white drum kit...
It's like the Diary of Anne Frank meets the Farley Brothers. I'm not sure.
I think that would be an interesting combination. And I think that does pretty much sum up the experience in the band, you know?
Yeah.
It's kind of like riding on a motorcycle if you're Jim Carrey and getting flies in your teeth.
Yeah.
They did that movie, right? Yeah.
We could probably actually, even if we have enough pull, like get the popcorn replaced with dead flies in the fields.
Oh, I think so. I think Rock we on. Could. I think we've got the connections to make that happen.
You know, actually, speaking of movies, I probably should have like put this up front before we lost all our listeners. But a former contributor to my site has made a movie.
She has, huh?
And what, you knew what's her, the movie? Or you knew of her at your alma mater?
I did. Yeah, she was. April was a student at Bradford at the same time I was. I think we both graduated in '99, although I could be wrong. I know I graduated in '99. I don't know anything about the movie though.
It's called Before We Get to Seattle. I don't know. Like, should I just read the blurb on the Facebook page? Like,
would that be
the better way to go? It's kind of a long blurb, but I can speed read. And let's face it, nobody's listening.
Yeah.
Okay, so it says, it's 1991, and Chloe, a runaway, is leaving for Seattle with her bass player boyfriend, Slater. She dreams of grunge rock stardom and getting the hell out of Jersey. Before the two hit the highway, Chloe insists they stop off at a local deli to pick up supplies. Her real motive is to see her best friend Michelle one last time before she leaves. Chloe has a secret. She desperately needs a favor. Michelle, who is very busy making sandwiches for a long line of hungry customers, is both overjoyed and frustrated at the sudden appearance of her missing friend. Chloe and Michelle hide out in the store bathroom and are constantly interrupted by angry store customers while they solve Chloe's big problem. It says that they wrap production in June and are getting ready to move on to editing, and their priority at the moment is to pay the editor and obtain festival music rights. And they're digging deep in the Sub Pop catalog for this, and there we are. So apparently you can find out more about the movie by going to Indiegogo.com, and the website is Before We Get to Seattle. So it'd be like Indiegogo.com/ Before We Get to Seattle with a dash between the words. Maybe I'll just include a link somewhere in the podcast description.
Interesting. But that does sound, you know, when I knew her, she was writing about music for the school newspaper, the Bradford Voice. And so that sounds right up her alley. Sounds, you know, and she was always a good rock/ general music journalist. So sounds like something she could do really well. So yeah. Did she write it, direct it?
Let's have a look at the page. This is where I become a terrible salesman. I'm like, I don't know. What do you want from me?
I noticed at least one or two other people who... at least one other person who went to Bradford with us, who's contributing money, it looks like.
Nice.
To help
fund. It says that she is the writer and director.
There you go.
Sorry about that.
Definitely sounds interesting.
It's a terrible endorsement.
Yeah, but no, it's not terrible. I wonder, you know, thinking back to our... There's a lot of... road tripping is really... Like, I've never been on a road trip, so I'm always interested in road trip movies. And this one sounds like it's got a little bit of that, where they go out west. I wonder whether people are interested in movies where they don't road trip, where they kind of just stay in their town. And they're, I don't know, like, I think about our movie and then the band, and is the band interested in going out to Seattle, or is the band sort of interested in... I'm not sure where I'm going with this, but...
I think our band is interested in playing the high school talent show and, if possible, playing a club in Boston.
Yeah, I think so. I wonder whether that makes them any less compelling. I don't think it does. I think, you know,
I think that gives them an everyman quality.
Yeah, I think so. It's interesting. I love music films. I think we've talked about in the past that that's sort of the natural intersection of our two sites is, you know, things like Almost Famous and.
Well, there's that new one coming out. It Might Get Loud, right? Which
yes. Oh, that looks very cool. I haven't listened to very much of. Is it? Not, I was about to say Jack Black.
Well, apart from High Fidelity, hopefully most of us haven't.
I haven't heard much of the. Is it Jack White?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I was close. I haven't heard a lot of his music. I do have a few White Stripes albums in my collection, and I've just recently coming to sort of be familiar with the stuff. But him in that trailer, what was it called again? It's called
It Might Get Loud.
It Might Get Loud. Really compelling stuff. Where he creates the guitar out of nothing and it,
yeah. Just junk laying around.
Yeah, and the combination of him and the Edge and what's his name?
Edge, sir.
I knew that. I was just testing it. You know, the combination of the three of them is really, really what makes it for me, because you've got three sort of different eras of musician and really interesting music. Like, I haven't heard The Edge speak a lot, but I'm really interested in hearing what he has to say.
Yeah. No, we should go see this movie when I come home.
Yeah. What? When is it out?
It is out now.
Oh.
In small places.
I think it's when you come home, and I'm not saying this means that we won't see It Might Get Loud, but I'm remembering, like, I think there was a movie, and of course I don't know if Kaylee is within earshot, so...
She's not in here, man.
She didn't teleport to the UK. There was a movie about the word F-U-C-K a few years back, which I think we were going to go see one time when you were home. Work it out. Popsicle, yes. There's a movie about the word popsicle. That had cameos by like George Carlin and Kevin Smith, and
that's true.
We were gonna go see that, and I never went and saw it. And
yeah, because I realized I had to go with nothing.
Yeah. I see how it is. But maybe we'll get there.
Maybe. Should. And actually, there's the new Tarantino flick, which yes. I probably shouldn't say the name of.
Well, you can say the name. I have headphones on. You can say anything you want.
I just want to say popsicle again.
Popsicle.
So there's Sidney Tarantino's
glorious popsicles.
That's right. Which apparently at the premiere, one of the premieres in was it Tennessee or somewhere random?
I'm not sure.
Al Gore was hosting the premiere of this movie. I guess because there was someone who worked on both Inconvenient Truth and Inglourious Basterds, but. Yeah, can you imagine anybody less well-suited to that film? They could have gotten, I don't know, the Pope, you know?
Yeah,
but
well, you know, his ambitions to be president are all washed up now, right? So you know,
I think so, yeah. I wouldn't want the job.
No.
It doesn't pay well enough to put up with people coming to town hall meetings with assault rifles.
No.
Can I just... How does that... I mean, okay, look... We have a freedom to speech, right? But we don't get to yell fire in a movie theater.
Right.
That's not free speech. That's public endangerment. You know, that's freedom of speech is really about freedom to express ideas, not about the freedom to yell all the time everywhere.
Right.
That's not your freedom of speech. Your freedom of expression is what it is. And, okay, fine, the Constitution gives us a right to keep and bear arms for the purpose of maintaining a well-regulated militia, but we'll ignore that part because everybody else does. Mm-hmm. How do they get to exercise that right within assassination distance of the president? I mean, like, you know... I don't know. I don't understand. it really alarms me when I watch the news over here, and it's like, there was that guy in New Hampshire who brought a loaded pistol on his side, and you know, to Portsmouth, and the guy interviewing him is like, so is that gun loaded? And he's like, what kind of idiot would bring an unloaded firearm anywhere? I'm like, okay.
Oh, boy. Welcome to New Hampshire, Mr. President.
New Hampshire has always been, I think, well, maybe Connecticut, but New Hampshire, I think, has always been kind of the odd one out in the liberal Northeast. You know, it's like liberal surrounding a sea of red, although not at the moment, but...
Well, it's, you know, I was never a huge fan of the state, but it's growing on me. I'll admit part of why it's growing on me is that I feel like I'm being embraced by lots of organizations and things over here.
That helps. And they voted you like best donut maker or something?
They did. Best donut maker. Best popsicle salesman. Yes.
Which I guess makes you a pimp.
Yeah, yeah.
Never mind.
Stone cold pimp, you know. Yeah, no, the New Hampshire Magazine voted Geek Force 5 the best pop culture blog in the state, which I don't know what that means, because I don't
think... They tell you who you beat.
Yeah, no.
Like, so you can see them at parties and go, hey, man, we were up for that award, and yeah, I guess you lost.
They did vote, vote me that, and I'm getting to, really cool, this weekend, I'm going up to... study playwriting with Ernest Thompson, the dude who wrote On Golden Pond and lives in New Hampshire, like out of nowhere. You know, he's doing this, and I'm gonna get to go up there.
Great.
I'm being asked to consult on New Hampshire things now, and like,
really? Like what? Like, Chris, the Fish and Wildlife Service is having a problem with invasive species of trout. What do you think?
Well, anything, you know, because my friend John Herman and I started this thing, All Things Out Loud, which is seven New Hampshire writers reading from their work.
Cool.
All of a sudden, like, John is pretty well known throughout the state, but all of a sudden, and when it comes to writing, mm-hmm. they're like, oh, John is friends with this other guy over here. Maybe we should... get him involved. So different writers things in New Hampshire I'm getting called on now or emailed, and so it's very interesting. The state is changing in some ways, and I still think that hardcore conservative core of the state will always be there, but I think it's mellowing here and there.
Cool.
Especially on the seacoast, there's a huge arts community sort of popping up in Portsmouth and in Newmarket and places like that. But obviously not enough artsy-fartsy people out there to keep guys with guns away from the president.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. I felt suddenly very, very nervous watching the news the other day. And,
yeah.
You know, I mean, it seems unlikely that our president will get shot, but...
Yeah.
Considering that everybody on the right keeps screaming about how we want to string these socialists up from trees, I just hope they don't have any town hall meetings in, you know, let's say Mississippi.
I hope they kind of avoid that. Be nice. Mississippi. One Mississippi, two Mississippi, three. Is Sawyer from Lost from Mississippi? No.
I thought he was from, no, wait.
Missouri? Where the heck is he from? Where's Wikipedia when you need it?
Here, Lostpedia. Let's go.
Lostpedia. Where is James Whitey Ford from?
And all these people just have to wait. We're just like...
They do. They just...
Where?
No, well, they don't have to wait. They could look it up themselves. And
you know what would be even more interesting for the folks at home? Hey, what's this thing on my desk? What is this? What is this thing on my desk? What's this?
What is that thing on you? A computer?
No, there's a thing on my... Hang on. It's I'm not going to describe it or tell you anything about it. Or, yeah. Okay, it's fine now.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, according to Lostpedia,
yes.
He may have been living in Knoxville, Tennessee, based on the markings on the envelope of his letter, the one he writes as a child. Mm-hmm. Apart from that, we don't get a lot. You know, life as con man eventually takes him to Tampa. But Yeah, I don't know. I don't know where.
Well, he's from the South.
He's clearly from the South.
Yes.
We're
not saying anything in general about Southerners. We're not making any cliches or sort of, you know, there's nothing wrong with being from the South.
No. Nope. Listen. Nope. Don't shoot us.
Yes, don't shoot us. Sawyer might shoot us. Although, I'm hearing crazy things about what might be coming in Lost Season 6, coming out of Comic-Con.
So your website was saying just the other day. I mean, I don't actually read it. I just see the headlines ago, whatever. But
yeah, I know. That's what most people do.
I don't care for your stuff.
Based on the Google Analytics stats on
I mean, if I'm being honest.
And I want you to be honest.
I mean, I even saw that there was a thing the other day about Meatloaf, and I was like, oh, Meatloaf, but oh, it's Chris. So,
yeah,
you know.
Whatever.
But
I was writing
about Lost.
Yes, let's talk about Lost. Let's avoid Meatloaf because Meatloaf has never lost anything.
See, I have to mock your webpage because I haven't done anything online.
Well, see, I was trying to be nice and avoid talking about.
Yeah. We will return to activity soon, but my dissertation crisis has taken over my life.
I understand.
We are now coming through the. Nobody's looking for my stuff anyway.
Tell me about
Lost.
Lost, coming out of Comic-Con, the San Diego Comic-Con, where there's always a Lost panel, they had, I think, two or three commercials which were set in what appeared to be an alternate reality.
Uh-huh. Yes.
One of them Hurley's was talking
to Mr. Klux thing, right?
Yes, Hurley owning Mr. Klux, which is part of the reality that was there, but owning Mr. Klux and being very happy about having won the lottery is everything apparently is going well for him, and he's just back from Australia and is doing this new sort of Australian themed chicken or something.
Right.
So there's that one. There was a clip from an America's Most Wanted talking about Kate, where she was trying to blow up not her father's house, but like the father's place of work.
Yeah.
Something slightly different, right? So you can tell that the character is still taking the same arc, but weird things have happened. Mm. And what was the third? I feel like there was a third one, but I can't. There was an Oceanic Air ad that was
perfect safety record
for the last 30 years or something like that.
See, my feeling is this is all disinformation.
Hmm. I'm not so sure. I think they might be pulling an alternate reality thing on us, where that we're not going to get rid of the old reality, but there's this alternate thing. And me, what I don't want to see happen is spend an entire season again of them deciding whether or not they're going to go back to the island. Like, I don't need 7 or 8 episodes of are we going to go back to the island?
Right.
What I can see happening is everyone back on the island, and the flashes are sort of alternate reality flashes where they had to make a decision to take this new life that Jack made for them, that Juliet made for them by blowing up the bomb, or they make the decision to go back to the reality as we know it.
It's an interesting idea. I mean, there's so many themes of kind of judgment and moral worth and, I don't know, just kind of tests of character strewn throughout the 5 seasons. It almost seems like at some point some observing character is going to confront our heroes and judge them in a way, like the monster judges Ben.
Right.
Or, you know, the way Jacob kind of passes judgment with his lists. And you almost wonder if, you know, these... Yeah, maybe there are kind of like, this is what you did with your life, and here's what you could have done with your life, or, you know, vice versa. This is what could have happened, and this is what has happened.
Yeah.
And so on. You know, maybe it's a way of kind of forcing these people to confront who they really are, in a sense.
Is that maybe what Jacob's, you know, they made a very big point of Jacob actually touching each of the characters he interacted with in the season finale, and maybe that's the instrument of what you were just talking about. is that in that moment they get the choice. Because the one thing that I've heard people speculate about, and I think it's there in the ads, is that what they meant to change happened much earlier than when they meant to change it. They didn't just stop the plane from crashing. They changed something in 1977 in this alternate reality.
Maybe Star Wars won Best Picture, didn't it, at all, and now we don't have to put up with the stupid prequels. Yay!
Oh, that's an interesting theory.
Can I just say I love that Hillary was saying The Empire Strikes Back?
I loved it too.
That was the absolute best thing in that whole show.
That was an amazing. It wasn't that wasn't their strongest episode, but it wasn't a terrible episode. But how many buts can I throw into a sentence? But you're right that
how many commas you managed to get.
The best. And can you imagine trying to transcribe this? Kevin Smith has a new book out. It's transcribed Smodcasts. Mm-hmm. And I can't, can you imagine trying to transcribe these things?
Who's the intern that gets to do that?
I don't know.
Do you think he uses different fonts, like when he yells at Shecky? Like there's a bright red font?
I am so far behind on my Smodcast listening. Although, because for a while, you and I think, I don't know if we talked about it on... here on the Goat or privately, we talk about how he just seems to get stoned a lot recently.
Yeah, it's kind of lazy.
So I stopped listening around that time. I was kind of like, you know what? I don't need to listen to Kevin Smith get stoned.
He's kind of going through a Grady Tripp phase, you know?
Yeah. Then I heard him...
Professor Tripp, not the other one.
Yeah, right. Professor Tripp from Wonder Boys, not Graydon Tripp, the highly respectable dude who does all sorts of awesome things for charity.
Being clear.
Just being clear. Where was my train of thought?
Wait, you need to listen to it. But...
Yes. I heard him, his presentation from Comic-Con, and one of the first things he did was acknowledge that he's getting stoned a lot and that he
watched that on YouTube too.
Stoned too much. And I was like, all right, so at least he's aware that he's smoking a little bit too much lately.
I probably could have put up with that, but it was the Wayne Gretzky all the time, every episode. Our little podcast it's cute. A couple people seem to like it. God bless them.
God bless them.
You know, I don't know how you can talk about Wayne Gretzky for 20 hours. Yeah.
I don't know how you can talk about Wayne Gretzky for 20 hours either. I don't know where that obsession came from either. It seemed to sort of come out of the blue. Yeah. And then, I mean, I know he loves hockey. Right. I guess he'd watched a documentary, and then it was every week he was talking about Gretzky. And I don't know if that stopped after he... after they did the thing in Brantford where they played hockey in the tournament. Gosh. All right. Has he talked about the new movie at all on any of the recent ones? Have you listened
to it? A little bit. Well, I watched the whole thing from Comic-Con. He kind of talked about it, but then he didn't want to talk about it. And then he wanted to talk about Gretzky. But, I guess they wrap shooting. So
yeah, that's what I heard.
We'll see. But, I'd like to... see how the book works out, but
yeah,
I don't know.
I haven't bought any of his books since the screenplay to Dog. Maybe no, I bought Jay and Silent Bob as a screenplay. I was about to buy Clerks 2. I don't know if I ever did, because I really did like his screenplays for a number of years. In fact, I think sometimes his screenplays are better than the film that results from them. Yeah. I certainly thought that with Dogma.
Yeah.
So lots of people I know love Dogma, and I hate Dogma because of Linda Fiorentino.
I like some of it.
Yeah, I do like some of it, but...
But, yeah. Although it's funny, not funny that John Hughes died. I think actually that really sucks. But it was funny how many obituaries of John Hughes, like, four paragraphs in, were like, and it came back to public consciousness with the release of Dogma, where the strikeout fiction in Sherman, Illinois.
That's funny.
I thought that was kind of funny.
It's very sad that John Hughes passed away. And I did. I threw something up on my website that didn't get a ton of responses, but did get some responses, like, what's your favorite John Hughes movie? What is your favorite John Hughes movie? I think you responded, but maybe people, you know, haven't visited.
It's really tough, man. Like, I mean, I think I ended up picking Ferris Bueller because it's the one that I've seen the most. It's the one that I put on the most. But, man, I don't know. I mean, The Breakfast Club, you know, Pretty in Pink, 16 Candles... They're all right there, you know, very close. I mean, I got to say that probably my least favorite is like Curly Sue, but it's really hard, you know, because if I say Ferris Bueller, then it's like, okay, Ferris Bueller. But then I'll think, oh, wait a minute. Then there was Uncle Buck, and that was pretty good.
Yeah.
That's tough. But I will say that not Home Alone, probably not Curly Sue.
No.
And anything that he did with the Beethoven series under...
Oh, man. He was involved with that. I don't think he
was indeed in his pen name. So, you know, 80s, very good to John Hughes. 90s, not so good.
I still stand by. I really like Weird Science. I don't know. It probably doesn't... Maybe it doesn't hold up, I'm sure, but...
I watched it just the other day, and I was struck at how good everything was, except... I thought the stuff with Chet was really lazy. You know, like, maybe I just didn't like the character, and that was my problem, but it was just like, yeah, okay, we get it, the guy's a jerk.
Yeah.
Go back to the kooky thing with the woman from the computer, please.
Right. That premise, I was writing an article earlier today about Shazam, Captain Marvel, the original Fawcett Comics Captain Marvel, and how that is sort of one of... That has to be sort of a small boy's fantasy, that he's one magic word away from being this kick-ass superhero. And I think the adolescent or teenage boy's fantasy is that he could, at least in the 80s, you know, I don't know, even now, that he could cook up a real live woman that would care about him at all with his computer.
Yeah, well, you know, I wouldn't say I spent a lot of hours on the project. Kept going wrong. I kept ending up with, like, squirrels. Oh, it's squirrel. Great.
Oh.
Yeah, it's tough. I don't know. I mean, it's been a weird year for celebrities dying, and I'm starting to think that there's going to be a new VH1 show, you know, worst week ever for the 80s, you know, or something. It's
I read an article the other day talking about how 20, 30, 40 years from now, it's going to be, because of the rise of micro-celebrity, that there's going to come a time where pretty much every day somebody that once impacted your life in some way is going to die.
Wait a minute. So the premise of the article is that somehow, sometime in your life, people that matter to you will die.
I'm not describing it well, but
that's, you know, extraordinary.
So there will be enough celebrities at a certain point.
I see.
That we talk about, like, the rule of three. Like, you know, if somebody, you know, somebody died today, somebody's probably going to die tomorrow, and then there'll be a third within a few days, that at a certain point there are going to be so many celebrities or so many people that we identified as celebrities at some point in our life that every day there's going to be someone who we're like, oh, I remember that guy.
Interesting. Why is it never the ones I want to die?
There's a great Dennis Leary bit about that from his No Cure for Cancer. He's like, you know, talks about all the rock stars that are dead, but we can't get Bon Jovi into a helicopter. You know, and it eventually devolves into a, you know, we should have, somebody should have shot Elvis in the head back in 1955 when he was thin, you know, whatever. And, you know, that's why I'm glad Jesus died when he did, because, you know, if he had lived to be any older, he would have been roaming around Jerusalem with black sideburns and a gold lace suit saying, damn, I'm the son of God, give me a cheeseburger. Something like that. I don't know. Bad remembrance of a Dennis Leary bit, but
I always remember the bit from that one about, you know, how we don't eat the cute animals.
Yes.
Yeah.
What are you?
I'm a cow. Get a truck.
Yeah. But I'm an animal, I got rights. Yeah, he's your cousin. What are you? I'm an otter. What do you do? I swim around on my back and do cute little human things with my hands. Okay, you're free to go.
That's actually how I choose my food at restaurants. Although I will leave her anonymous, but I do know one vegetarian. Is not vegetarian because she eats plenty of chicken. Mm-hmm. Because chickens aren't cute, but she won't eat pigs and she won't eat cows because those are cute.
Pigs are cute?
I guess.
They're smelly.
Although she's cracking because recently she said, oh, I smelled some bacon the other day and it was so good smelling. Yeah, it's bacon.
It's bacon. Bacon smells good.
It's the one thing that if you're having an argument where someone's like, dude, God totally doesn't exist, you can just go, bacon.
Bacon.
And they'll go, oh, yeah, yeah, I guess, yeah.
Yeah, but there certain people believe that God doesn't want them to eat bacon. So what about that?
Yeah, but I think that's just the whole, like, you know how, like, when you're Catholic, you have to, like, emphasize how sinful you are and how undeserving you are. I think that's just, like, an extreme, like, we're unworthy of the bacon kind of position.
Oh,
I think
that's a very good
bacon
point.
is haram because, you know, it's just too good. For me, you know, that's no, probably not. It probably has to do with the fact that actually they were remarkably unclean animals that,
yeah,
once upon a time, actually, you probably would have been best to stay away from. But you know, bacon, come on, bacon.
Bacon.
Actually, there was in the Anthony Bourdain's No Reservations, which is one of the few TV shows I watch all the time. Mm. Last week, he went to San Francisco and he went to Pirate Cat Radio. which is an actual pirate radio station and cafe, and it's a vegan cafe, but they serve a maple bacon espresso.
Mm-hmm.
Maple actual bacon.
Mm-hmm.
It's what they call it, refined bacon. And he said it takes about 40 pounds of pork product to produce, I think he said, 4 ounces of refined bacon fat, which is added to the maple syrup and the coffee.
Uh-huh.
And bam.
Wow.
Now, how you can have a vegan cafe and do that, I don't know. But all I know is I heard those words and went, okay, where's I got to book a flight to San Francisco. Do nail the stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Would you eat that?
I don't think. Maybe. I'm not a big caffeinated beverage person.
That's true, actually. One sun-kissed and you're like under the table jittering.
Yeah. I've taken to drinking a lot of sun-kissed lately because I've been driving late at night, and of course longtime listeners of the podcast will remember that I had an incident on the way back from a Nine Inch Nails show.
Oh yeah, as if. Guys, you're gonna have to go and listen to the last episode.
Yeah.
Bitch.
I've been drinking a lot of Sunkist to keep awake during long drives, and the jitters seem to hit me at about 3/4 of a liter.
Wow.
I've determined.
That's amazing.
Because I've been going, often it will happen that I will walk across the street to the 7-Eleven and I will pick up the liter because it's cheaper to buy a liter than it is to buy the 16-ounce.
So you just stand there in front of the store with your paper bag, drinking your liter of caffeinated orange soda.
Yes, caffeinated orange soda. There's nothing better. Nothing better in the world. Well, no, there's bacon.
See, I don't know, man. I that's right, watch your tone. See, I grew up drinking so much Coke.
Right.
Like, my parents, they were either not around, or because they weren't around, they felt guilty, so they gave me whatever I wanted.
Right.
And now, I'm not proud of it, but I'll go through, like, 2 liters in a day. And, you know, then I can't sleep at night. But, like, it doesn't affect me. Like,
yeah.
I'll still be tired. Like, I'll just drink it, and then I'll be like, oh, man, I'm very tired. I've been trying to counteract this. I actually have been making, because I have a blender, so I've been making a lot of lemonade from scratch, which is very nice.
I've been on
a lemonade. We can put a recipe in our new goat cooking show. Cooking
we'll,
goat.
We'll give No Reservations a run for their money.
Right? That's right.
Wait, are they a cooking show, or are they just visit restaurants?
No, he travels around the world, and like, there's a lot of food. Like, he sees what people eat and he eats their food. But also, there are a lot of kind of like quirky cultural exhibitions and just him kind of traveling around talking about stuff. It's It's hard to describe what kind of genre it is. It's kind of like travel and food.
Okay.
But it's really great. I really like it.
Yeah, you're the second person I've heard rave about it. Colin from Vidler talks about it on his blog a lot.
So. I like it a lot. So, anyway.
Well, that's something to watch since I'm not doing the Lost rewatch anymore.
How come?
Because, there's a 3-year-old in the house and we're not getting around to it. But I'll get back to that eventually. I mean, the way I look at it, the way they had it structured was kind of like 3 or 4 episodes a week. Now that I'm way far behind, I can do big, long marathons to get through it.
I do that. I'm finally going to give in on the Mad Men, which it seems like everybody knows.
Don't do it. No, I'm just kidding.
I don't know virtually anything about the show because I'm in the UK and they have 3 channels and they all show cheese. But I don't know. I mean, apparently everyone in the world thinks it's the best show since whatever the last show was, we all agreed was the best show. So, I guess I have to watch it.
I haven't seen it yet. I think it's on AMC here in the US or something like that, and I don't get that station. So,
that's what happened with me in Lost. I didn't watch Lost from the beginning. I picked it up around episode 4.
Uh-huh.
Because there was basically a month of reviews where everybody went, "Oh my God, Lost! Oh my God, it is the promised show." So, what can I do?
I haven't picked up anything new recently. Lost is pretty much it. And there's always that hope that, this is gonna. I'm gonna be once Lost is over, I'm not gonna watch any more TV. I'm done. That's the last series for me. But I'm sure something will come along.
I was shocked and appalled the other day to discover that there's a 10 Things I Hate About You TV show.
Yeah,
on ABC.
Yeah. It used to have John Ritter on it, I think.
No. This is a new show.
Really?
This is a new show of the movie 10 Things I Hate About You with Ledger and Julia Stiles, the parody of Taming of the Shrew.
Right.
Now it's a TV show set with these characters.
Weird.
In just a regular kind of high school TV show.
Why is everything set in high school, by the way?
I don't know. It's not the happiest time of our lives.
No, it's
funny because you spend a lot of time, as I've realized, growing older, either trying to prove a point to someone who gave you a hard time about your life in high school.
Right.
Or trying to show up people that you haven't seen in 20 years that you were in high school with.
Yeah.
But high school was not fun.
See, I say we just leave it with Saved by the Bell and My So-Called Life. You've got slapstick and you've got total serious and like that's all the high school shows we ever need.
I can't think of one that I really enjoyed. I never watched Degrassi, Junior High or any of the follow-up shows. And I don't know.
And they never have actors that are actually age appropriate.
Right.
Except for and I've just started watching this because it just came on Hulu. I never watched it back in the day. So My So-Called Life had an actress who was actually 15 playing the 15-year-old. And then, of course, I looked at the ages of the rest of the people, and they're all old. Like, she's the only, or at least as far as I could tell, is the only one that's actually age-appropriate.
But, was Dawson's Creek a high school show in any fashion?
Yes, I think so.
Just on the creek.
I think it was. Of course, they were probably all way old by the time.
Yeah, that show had a dude in it called Pacey, so I didn't want to watch it.
It did.
But seriously, that's how superficial I am. I was like, oh, the character's called Pacey.
Yeah.
Yeah, whatever. I'm done.
Yeah, no, I'm not watching any show with a guy named Pacey.
Of course, it was Buffy, right?
Buffy, that's true. So, I've not watched Buffy.
I saw the first episode. I'm that cool. I saw one episode.
Did you ever watch Firefly?
I did watch Firefly. I like Joss Whedon. I do. I don't know. I don't know why
I like Whedon as a comic book writer. I have not watched any. And I like Dr. Horrible.
Yeah?
But I have not seen any of his other TV shows.
Dollhouse is all right. I've been watching it. It was kind of a slow starter.
Oh, that's true. I did watch the first episode of that.
I just saw one of the bonus episodes that wasn't on air, which is a very bizarre, late in the future kind of episode.
Did they didn't cancel that, did they? Is it back?
No, it's coming back for a second season. But they did take away my Sarah Connor, which I'm sad about, because it's not so much that it was a great show, it's just I'm annoyed because it ended on a huge cliffhanger. And it's like, well, could you just tell me, sir, what was going to happen? Because, I'd like to know.
You know what I'm really annoyed by, and I just discovered it, that it ended on a cliffhanger, or I get the impression that it ended on a cliffhanger, was Captain Power, the old TV show from, like, the 80s or early 90s that was all tied in with Captain Power and the something of the universe. And it was tied in with a toy line where you could actually, like, fire the starship at the TV screen because it was light activated or some
Captain
damn thing.
Captain Power and the Soldiers of the Future.
Yes, and I want to see that move. I want to see that show so badly, but it's not out on DVD except as a very somebody made their own, like, bootlegs, and who knows if it's actually. So anyway, I really want to see that show, but I can't see it.
And it's apparently not on YouTube.
No, not that I know of.
Wow.
So a friend and I have been going back and forth about that on Twitter here and there, and saying, like, man, we got to find a way to watch that.
Oh my God! Half the episodes were written by the Babylon 5 guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry.
I don't remember it being as good as everyone it's not that I remember it being bad. I just remember it being a kids show. But apparently, it was very well respected and well liked by adults just as much. And now I'm like, I want to see it as an adult. I'd love to check that out.
I found a website the other day where I could watch the old Dungeons and Dragons cartoons.
Jesus.
Super excited.
How many of them did they make? It seems to me that was one of those shows like the X-Men cartoon of the 80s, where there was only one episode. Like, there was never an X-Men show in the 80s. It was just prior to the X-Men.
There were like five series of Dungeons and Dragons cartoons. The Wuzzles is one I always think about as being like this huge thing.
Yeah.
But no, there were like 12 episodes of The Wuzzles.
Like, is The Wuzzles the one with
Bumble Lion and...
Yes, I had one of those.
Yeah,
it was only 12 episodes.
I had a Rhino Key.
I had...
And there was
not Bumble. I had the one that was like part elephant, I think. Was there one that was part elephant?
There was an elephant.
Yeah.
I am totally Wikipedia-ing.
The Wuzzles. I can't ever remember the name of that show when I'm trying to remember
it. Eluru.
That's right, Eluru. Eluru.
Nice. Have we lost all of our audience yet?
I hope so, because I think it's time to go.
Is it time to go?
I don't know. It's
pretty funny, actually, because you look at this list of characters. All right, this is what just happened to my brain. Going down the list. Bumble Lion, half bumblebee, half lion, blah, 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 blah. Butter bear, half butterfly, da-da-da-da-da. Rhinoki, half rhinoceros, half monkey. And then I get to narrator, and I'm like, oh, it's the narrator.
Right.
Dumb.
Tycoon?
Tycoon.
I'm looking at the Wikipedia page. Half tiger, half raccoon. Croc?
Just awesome.
Brat, Flizzard.
Yeah, but Croc is so dumb. What a Croc. Huh. Half crocodile, half dinosaur. They couldn't do anything with that name.
But he's the main villain of the show.
I mean, you know, he's a no good ignoramus, it says.
Yeah.
Yeah, that said about me by my supervisor not too long ago. Characters that appeared in the books but not on TV, and the list is like a mile long. Who's the person that researched this?
I don't know.
I wish he would tell you. She could send him an email and be like, dude, when did you have the time to look up this part?
There's no way. If you like click on edit on Wikipedia, will it tell you who the last person to edit it was?
Because I edited the Au Revoir Simone entry when it announced their album, and it was just... Actually, it's really annoying. I don't know if you've ever used their interface, but it's surprisingly weird syntax to add a citation. Like, it's not just a hyperlink. You have to... It's very, very bizarre. I don't like it.
I've looked at the stuff, but I immediately looked at it and then ran away because it just didn't make any sense to me.
Like, I know the public has been crying out for one for our band, but I haven't gotten around to it yet.
Yeah. A whole wiki on the band?
On the band, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
The places we played and... Yeah.
I once imagined doing a wiki... for a TV series that didn't exist, so that it would be
or
everyone collaborate
didn't exist. Your short stories.
Yeah, I did make an album for the band that doesn't exist.
That's right. You blew it up.
blew it up. Although I have a friend who wants to make that album with me. Like, he wants to actually make all of those songs happen.
Under the Pop Bubblegum Trash moniker, are we...
I don't know. I do think about doing another Pop Bubblegum Trash album every once in a while, but not that seriously, because I haven't written a lyric in years that was either funny or meaningful. Like, just lots of pathetic excuses for whatever.
Maybe just not as good as you want.
Yeah. So, when I finally have some lyrics to share, because all of my songs always begin with lyrics, then maybe I'll do it.
Right.
But I would like to make... I do think I will make that record at some point, the imaginary record for the band that doesn't exist.
Awesome.
To try and hype the novel. So I was thinking of ways to promote the written word in different ways. I read recently that the average sales numbers for a for a literary fiction book, 2,000 hardcover copies or 8,000 paperback copies is being a realistic estimate of the average literary novel sales. This comes from pimpmynovel.blogspot.com.
Well, that sounds reputable.
Yeah. Well, the dude is apparently a... works in sales at one of the...
If you were one of my students, I would totally just... I'm like, he came from what? F. Done.
Well, luckily I'm not one of your students.
I'm ruthless with my students.
Yeah. Well, he does seem to have some idea of what he's doing. I wouldn't, you know, write a paper with that as my source, but I would talk about it on a podcast.
Well, right. I mean, I guess we want to lower the standard of discourse on the podcast. I'll just dig a hole in the floor here.
All right. You know,
actually, I should do that. The girl downstairs would be very angry.
Did you know that The Wuzzles premiered on the same day as Disney's Adventures of the Gummy Bears, but on different networks?
Gummy Bears rules.
The Wuzzles was on CBS and Gummy Bears was on NBC.
Gummy Bears, it's... Oh, man. This is true. I actually have every episode of The Gummy Bears on my external hard drive. It's true.
No kidding.
I was bored one day and I was like, oh, I went down with some new TV to watch. And I started thinking of crazy stuff that might be there. And like, oh, my God. The really embarrassing thing, I think, is that when I was like 9 or 10, I kind of sort of had a crush on Princess Calla. Like, I think I was like, I want to meet Princess Calla one day. But
if I remember Princess Calla, I don't remember much about the Gummy Bears.
It didn't work out. I mean, no. You know, we two different worlds.
Yeah.
But very much like Great Expectations. Really, she was my Stella when I was 10. It was
sad.
What are you gonna do? But the Gummy Bears ran for a long time, man.
They ever have a gummy goat? Was there a gummy goat?
I do not recall a goat. But that would be good for us. We could have him promote. I'm sure he's not working.
No, probably not.
This is actually what it is. We need to hire people to do this podcast for us, because, man, I don't know. Can we outsource? Can we get, like, people in India to do this?
I think... I know a guy.
Yeah.
No.
I wonder if we could hire Andy and Ken to do this.
That would be interesting. That would
be great.
It would be very interesting. We should get them on Skype and just let them talk.
I mean, Ken would be the more, you know, portly one, so he'd be you. And right. Andy's the cool one, so he could be me. And sorry, you know, I'm just telling it like it is. I mean, I'm just kidding.
I get it. You know.
Sorry.
Would they have anything to talk about? That's the thing.
We don't have anything to talk about. You know what I was going to say before that came up? Oh my God, I watched Erie, Indiana the other day. So, you know.
Maybe we'll get a special guest on, or maybe we'll get both of them on and we'll just stop talking.
That's right.
If we actually
wanted to pretend it was a reputable podcast, you know, I could send an email to April and say, hey, do you want to talk about your movie on our podcast? Because... that would be actually kind of cool and useful.
It would be. But are we trying to be cool and useful?
Well, maybe we could just do it like once.
Yeah, maybe. Okay.
Yeah. All right. Well,
to that.
Usually we end by spoiling an episode of Lost, but we don't have any new episodes for 5.5 months to spoil, so...
No, to spoil an old one, but I think that we're beyond that.
I'll just say that in The Sixth Sense, Bruce Willis is dead the whole time. And do you want to give away an ending to something?
You know, I don't think I do.
Come on.
I can't think of one.
Darth Vader is Luke's father.
Darth Vader is Luke's father. Let's see.
Tell me something like around the $60,000 pyramid.
The crazy old woman in Titanic, she has the diamond the whole time.
No way.
Didn't go down with
that. That's Kate Winslet?
It is. That's Kate Winslet. Yeah. Yeah. That's the best I got.
Now here we go. There's actually a website called The Movie Spoiler.
The Movie Spoiler. I was thinking I have this article sitting up here that I plan to do something with on Geek Force 5 later, which is uncomfortable plot summaries. And that's where I got the idea for Titanic. I just quickly went over there. Uncomfortable plot summary for The Goonies. Physically abused retarded man finds love with overweight preteen.
Nice.
The Passion of the Christ. Mel Gibson fulfills fantasy of showing a Jew beaten to a bloody pulp and killed on screen.
Poor Mel Gibson, man.
And then Titanic was crazy old widow disregards lifelong memories of husband, children, and grandchildren in favor of that one time she, I can't say the word because my daughter's in the house, a bomb. Star Wars, religious extremist terrorists destroy a government installation, killing thousands.
Wow.
Lord of the Rings, midget destroys stolen property. And Boogie Nights, deformed boy goaded into a life of crime.
Amadeus, man with health problems, receives help from rival. That's true. There's the Debbie Does Dallas one. Cheerleaders develop valuable entrepreneurial skills. Fantastic. Groundhog Day, misanthropic creep exploits space-time anomaly to stalk coworker. I saw an interview actually with Harold Ramis just today, where somebody had apparently calculated how long Bruce Willis would have done in a day, but Bill Murray apparently had to spend 8.5 years, according to this guy, doing all the stuff with, you know, the Groundhog Day repetitions.
Right.
And Harold Ramis said that was probably low, and it was more likely a decade or more, or maybe 30, 40 years, considering how much time you probably goofed off. And, you know, people really shouldn't waste time thinking about that stuff. They could be out, you know, learning to play the piano or ice sculpt or, you know, whatever. So, anyway, I suppose this is as good a place as any to leave our bored and weary audience.
I think so.
Rosebud was his sled.
Oh, boy. See you later, guys.
See you next time, I guess.